Welcome back to another episode of the Energy Converter Student Voice Podcast. This is Charles Cole. I founded Energy Converters, and we focus on community voices, most of the time students. And this episode is special because we gave the full microphone and full show to students. I am not part of this episode. Jonathan Piper II, who is an energy converter amongst a ton of other things, he produced this show, he wrote this show, he found the guest for it. I just merely helped by pushing record. So I had nothing to do with the topic. And this is all him, and I'm extremely proud of him. So you get to go on a ride with him and his two guests as they discuss blackness. So sit back and enjoy and leave your comments and thoughts. Peace.
Ooh, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm black, they can't keep me down. I'm black and black with a smile. A black beam and a match. Two Afro puffs in the back. Who Afrocentric and bold. Well, that's the news of they soul. And Oprah money for goals. Hey, that's my black queen for you. Bought a buck and I love it. A Nefertiti tatting. Internet on black in her stomach. A black mink and fisted pick because she's black.
Hello, listeners. My name is Jonathan Piper II. I am a 2019 graduate from Skyline High School out here in Oakland. I was also the BSU president up at Skyline. And this is the Energy Converter Student Voice Podcast. So today, my two fellow guests are Isha Clark, and she was a rising senior at MetWest High School, and Najara Soriano, a rising junior at Emory High. And Najara is actually an excellent debater with the Bay Area Urban Debate League, BOTL for short. And I met Najara through Youth Together, a local nonprofit organization that teaches the youth how to do grassroots organizing in their community. Now, I met Isha in person for the first time when she invited me to the Black Allyship Circle that she was facilitating at Destiny's Art Alliance. And I must say, she is an excellent facilitator. So the circle that Isha invited me to, she brought up a quote that I really think everyone should hear and we should explore deeper. So I'll pass the mic to you.
Yes, this is a quote by Ralph Ellison. He says, "I am a man of substance, of flesh and bone, fiber and liquids, and I might even be said to possess a mind. I am invisible, understand simply because people refuse to see me. When they approach me, they see only my surroundings, themselves, or figments of their imagination. Indeed, everything and anything except me."
That was a lovely quote. So if you're wondering why you're here today, it's because we think that students don't get the right visibility in Oakland and in the community, and we just have a bad rep in general. And so it brings up the topic of identity and visibility. And so in that quote, you hear a man talking about feeling invisible and not feeling recognized. And he's an elder black man. So I'm wondering, how do the youth feel about being visible in their own city and in their community? And what does it mean to be visible? So that's something that I'd love to explore. Do you have a background on what the quote, like who made that quote and what that's about?
Yes, so I know a little bit. Ralph Ellison is a very well-known black leader. And that quote was in a book that he wrote, which I believe is called Invisible Man. And I think he kind of, his work from my knowledge is to just talk about the black experience, specifically from his perspective as a black man. Yeah.
So you two, as young ladies of color, how do you resonate with the quote that was read, or what is some thoughts that you have around what is, you know, the theme of the quote?
I think there's a lot to be said about who he's speaking about, you know, like who is he saying he's invisible to? And I think the most obvious answer is white people. I think that's what he was trying to say. But, you know, it brings up another side, which I know you're trying to get into about, if you're bringing up who he feels invisible to, what about the people that he's not invisible to? And that's black women. And so I think there's a lot of power in that quote, but there's also needs to be this recognition of the fact that Black men are not invisible to Black women. And a lot of times Black women are invisible to Black men, and that Black men are so consumed by their experience that they forget about the people who are in the background supporting them. And often in doing that, silence those voices.
You bring up a very strong point. I was going to get to that next. But how about you, Najara? When you think of that quote about visibility and just being Black and fitting into society, is there any things that get your gears rolling?
When I think about invisibility and being Black, I just think about like ontology for the low key part. But that quote in general was like he was describing what he was made up of, and then he was like talking about, you know, him being invisible. And I feel like a lot of Black people are invisible just because like of their identity in general, which is what this podcast is about. It was this quote from this poem that my friend stole from me. So basically it's like our voices are invisible. So our voices are like so low that they can't be heard, but yet loud enough to incriminate us. And like, you know, that's what it got me thinking about, like, you know, freedom of speech and stuff like that.
Nice. So I know you brought up a word that not a lot of us understand. It was ontology, correct? Am I right? Or I don't know. I'll let you explain so I don't embarrass myself. But can you explain that first word that starts with an A that you brought up about this quote reminding you of?
So ontology, it's basically the study of being. And what I'm using it for is like the phrase that Blackness is ontological. And what I mean by that is like, well, it kind of has something to do with the Black identity, because I don't want to go into it because ontology is like this huge thing that can't really be explained in like, you know, the amount of time that we have. But basically the Black body is like from slavery, it's just stuck to that same identity. And no matter what we change, like you might change the method, but you never change the like the mentality of what you're doing. Like you can give me air conditioning and you can say you're not a slave, but you can still pay me less. You can still shoot me on the street. You can still do all these things that makes me a slave.
Thank you for that. So you mentioned identity, and a lot of our listeners might not know how you identify or what you look like. So would the both of you mind sharing a little bit about yourself and how you identify and how people might perceive you based off of how you identify or the way that they see you?
excuse me. I am mixed. I am Black and Jewish. And I'm pretty tall. I'm like, 5'7", 5'8" and counting. And you know, I have the typical light skin, quote unquote, pretty eyes, quote unquote, pretty hair kind of vibe going on. And, you know, I think that very much influences my experience as a Black identifying person. And, you know, there's colorism and texturism and all these different isms that play into how we experience the world. And I have definitely had the privilege of having lighter skin and quote unquote prettier hair. And so, yeah, it definitely plays into my identity and how I experience life.
I guess I can be described as like a Black girl pretty much. I'm not really dark enough to be dark skinned, but yet I'm not light enough to be light skinned. So I'm like an awkward middle kind of tone. I also identify as like Black, Native American, Yemenis, stuff like that. But you know, when people see me on the street, they be like, yeah, that's one of those. So I believe I'm tall. I'm like 5'3" though, but you know, I can keep believing. And definitely my identity plays into like everything that I am, kind of, because like it's kind of hard because you always want to find somebody you can identify with. Like, you know, I'm a part of dark skin crew, I'm part of light skin crew, like I'm from Yemen, I'm from Saudi Arabia. You always want to find somebody who's like, you know, with you, and like you can't exactly do that when like you're just this awkward like middle ground of like between the dark skin and the light skin crew.
Well, on the surface, you're two both beautiful melanin queens. So don't ever let anybody diminish, you know, your self-esteem about who you are, how you look. But in terms of being invisible, again, bringing it back to the topic, Mr. Ellison actually had a response to his quote, the one about his substance and who he is. And so, Ms. Isha, if you don't mind talking about who responded to that quote and what that response was.
Yeah. So Toni Morrison, beautiful queen, responded to the quote saying, invisible to whom? Not me. And, you know, that kind of changed my whole perception of the quote. And at first when I read it, I was like, this is amazing. Like, he's really talking about the Black experience. And, you know, in this age of police violence and hate crimes and all of these other horrible things, there's definitely the topic of Black identity and what it means to be Black or look Black or talk Black or act Black or whatever is very prevalent. And so, you know, I'm trying to like trace my thoughts here, but, you know, there's not police shootings of white kids because there's a perceived aggression and violence when you're Black. And so through this quote, I really felt that he was saying, no matter who I am, what I've achieved in life, I'm always going to be perceived as something that I'm not. But when Toni Morrison responded, it made me realize that he was completely neglecting the people who are there for him. And it has been proven time and time again that Black women are there for Black men and that they're running the movements and doing the behind the scenes work and constantly not getting recognition for that. And honestly, not being part of the movement for liberation. In a lot of these Black liberatory movements, there's so much talk about the Black man, and there's never mention of the Black gay man or the Black woman or the Black trans person or anything other than this idea of, you know, the Black man. And so I thought it was really important to point out that we have to recognize the other side of the quote. Who are we neglecting by saying that we're invisible?
That's a great response. And now I'll see what Ms. Najjar has to say.
I definitely agree with everything she just said. Like, I believe the Black female and like other forms of Blackness are definitely like invisible in some aspects because people don't even know that the person who wrote some of Martin Luther King's speeches was a gay man. And some people don't realize that, like, in the Black Panthers, like, I'm not gonna diss them or anything because gang gang period, that there was like a lot of like sexual harassment of like women who were in the Black Panthers. Like, nobody ever talks about those certain things because like it all gets brushed under the like the context of being Black. Like, you see my skin first where you see my gender and my sex and something like that, and it's like kind of like a blanket term, I'm Black, but what's more under that? Like, who are we not seeing, like she said?
Also, if I may add, mm-hmm. It creates this really dangerous state where, like she mentioned, I want to like talk about that a little bit more, the Black Panther thing, because, you know, I'm from Oakland, born and raised, and the Black Panthers are super amazing, radical Black leaders, but there was a lot of violence. There was a lot of aggression towards Black women. There was a lot of neglect towards Black women in that movement. And because it's so important to maintain an image as a Black movement when we're constantly being attacked by white America and literally being labeled terrorists, we have to maintain a certain image. And so Black women are silenced because we can't speak out against our aggressors, who are Black men a lot of the time, most of the time, because we can't diminish what we're trying to build. And so oftentimes Black women have to suffer in our own movements that are supposed to be about our liberation because we feel like we can't talk about what's happening to us or else we'll harm the other people who we're working with and the movement that we're literally sacrificing everything to build.
That's a very valid point. And so you brought up, Isha, you talked about neglect, so like the neglect that goes into Black men realizing that Black women are there for them. And Najara also touched on it in her own words. So I was wondering, from your point of view, because everyone always has something they're going to say, is there kind of a double standard when it comes to Black identity and how people identify, and especially when it comes to heterosexual versus homosexual and the different identities that there are? Because there's more than one gender, and there's more than one gender that identifies as Black. So there's the race and then the gender identity. So how can those play hand in hand when feeling neglected and feeling like you're not being represented? Just how do you see people who identify as Black, but they also have another identity, like go, like get, you know, totally brushed off when these conversations are happening?
This is a very important conversation. Intersectionality is such an important thing for life, for building values and blah, 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 but really for society, and especially for movements for liberation and social justice, we always have to think about intersectionality. And what I mean by that is, like you said, a person is not one identity. We're composed of many different identities. I am Black. I'm also Jewish. I'm also a woman. I'm also straight. I'm also cisgendered. There's all of these layers of identity that create the experience that I'm living. And so in Black movements, there's often not a recognition of our other identities. And so that allows for oppression within our own movement, especially when talking about homophobia, patriarchy, transphobia. And so this conversation about intersectionality needs to be had, and that the Black experience is not one experience. There's so many different Black experiences because we all experience the world through our other identities. And if we can come together and really recognize that and talk about ways to really liberate everyone's fully Black identity, then we can really create a movement for Black liberation.
And you, Najara?
I actually have a big opinion on this because we have this discussion and debate a lot, because it's always like, you're oppressing me because I'm Black, but I'm gay. Like, I'm in the same spot. And it's just like, well, who's oppressed more? And are we having this conversation? And like, it's a very hard conversation because there are a lot of different ways you can interpret this, because some people will say, you see my skin color before you see my sexuality and my gender. But is that always true? Because, you know, homosexual people go through a lot of the same things that, like, Black people go through sometimes. They get kicked out their house. You know, they can sometimes be shot on the street, you know. And it's not fair that, like, sometimes we have this blanket cover up, like, Blackness. And I also believe that, like, we do this because Blackness doesn't have room to exist. So how do we have the other's identities within the Blackness that is already trying to exist? And that's a really hard thing to like cover, because if I'm barely struggling to be Black, how can I face other oppression? You know, because like if I'm already Black, how can I be Black and homosexual? Because that's like a double death if you think about it. Like Wilderson and Warren talk about in their books, and like Sexton talk about double consciousness and stuff like that. Like it's like the black trans and like other things within Blackness is like a double death for Black people, because we're already experiencing the Black oppression. Are we ready to experience more oppression? Mm-hmm. Not to mention, like, back in slavery, like there was like so much rape and pillage. Like Black people don't even know what to think anymore, because like if you think about it, why are Black people scared to be gay? Like, you know, like it's just like a taboo in the Black community, and like nobody has that like conversation of where it came from. Slavery, when slave masters was out here, you know, doing weird things.
I just want to add, like, that was really powerful talking about the who's oppressed more conversation, and that's something that happens so much. And I think we need to shift that from who's more oppressed to what do you need, you know? And if we can really talk, that's what I was saying. Like, if we can talk about that and have conversations instead of oh, well, I'm more oppressed because of this or whatever. What do you need to really be fully liberated, to really be fully free, is the question that we need to be asking.
And that actually led right into the next place. We're going to talk about that right now. And I know I asked this question also when we did the Black Allyship Circle about identity. And so as young Black women, identifying women, what does visibility look like physically and emotionally for you? And what do you need from Black men, from your community, and from society to feel like you're visible and being supported? Because we know you can identify what's happening, you can identify the problem, but what are you doing to solve it? So what do you need from the people around you who identify that problem to do in order to kind of conquer or to stop the problem from happening? Continuing.
When you say, what does visibility mean to us, what do you mean? Like,
from everybody, like when you walk into a room and like, oh, do you feel the need to identify yourself as a proud Black woman? Like, do you feel the need to already identify? So if I look at you and to me visibly, you're a Black woman, like what supports do you need so you don't feel like you're targeted as soon as you walk into a room?
So again, like going back to my identity, I am a light skin, obviously mixed Black young woman. And that definitely plays into how people perceive me, my identity. And so when I walk into a room, I recognize that the reaction and the stereotypes and the assumptions is very different than if I walked into the room and I was a dark-skinned young woman. So the conversation of my visibility and of another Black woman's visibility is different. But for me, I think, what am I trying to say? It's just, again, like going back to this conversation about intersectionality, recognizing that my visibility, what I need for my visibility or to feel visible, excuse me, is different than another young woman. One, two, I think that we need to talk more about what allyship looks like in the Black community, because we talk about allyship with white people, with, you know, people from different racial backgrounds, but what does allyship look like within our own community when we have such a diverse community? We need that. So one specifically, allyship between Black men and Black women is something that I feel very passionate about. And I think it starts with recognizing the presence of a Black woman in any space, and not in a sexualizing way or in, you know, just, oh, she's there, okay, let me keep doing what I'm doing. Thinking about how your presence as a Black man is impacting the space. Because a lot of times Black men are given the permission in Black spaces to take over, and Black women are silenced because of that, and all other groups of Black people as well. So what I'm trying to say is really being aware of the self, especially as a Black man, recognizing privilege in a space, recognizing how you continue oppression. That's another conversation that I could talk about for a long time, but we need to recognize as a people how we continue patriarchy in our own movements. And a lot of that is a result of trauma that we face. Waking up every day and walking in the world as a Black person is traumatic. And so we bring that into our movements, and we need to heal and talk about how we can transform that. Yeah, so that's what I have to say, just being aware.
I want to start off answering this question by saying, like, I believe everybody's identity is different. Mm-hmm. So, like, walking into the space as, like, a Black woman just isn't enough. Like, you want people to recognize you for you, not your skin color. And because, like, what comes with that is always going to be, like, a stereotype of some kind. And I know, like, that sounds bad, but you don't want somebody to assume that, like, you're going to be this way because you're Black. Like, I understand respecting my Blackness, you know, And I feel like that's a little bit different from like identity talk. But like when it comes to black men, oh my God. I just honestly want them to like recognize that, like, you know, we are black too. And just because I'm a woman doesn't mean you can speak over me, because like I'll get real dark up in here, period. But like, honestly, I just want black men to recognize the black woman as like beautiful, because I always feel like black men, like, I feel like everybody has this stereotype of like white women are prettier from like, you know, back in the day, like white women have always been seen as prettier. So like people will say that like, oh, these light skins are like beautiful. And you know, white skins are beautiful, but like, why do you say they're just like more beautiful than everybody else? Why is that? Is it because they're closer to whiteness, or, you know, what's the reason? Like, just appreciate, you know, black women, because like, honestly, if y'all didn't have us, who would you have?
Period.
And then for white people, it's just like, can y'all chill? Like, why are y'all so serious about this race thing? Like, if y'all didn't make it into such a big deal, then like people wouldn't be all up on the subject all the time. Like, if you would just chill out, because y'all decided to sail the seven seas and be like, we want these Negroes. And then y'all want to get mad when like black people have these conversations about their identities and stuff. Like, just be cool. Like, y'all get so scared when we call y'all for being racist. Oh, that's not me. Like, Greg, be quiet. I was just saying, like, don't do that. And like, stop trying to make me seem invisible unless I'm closer to whiteness. I shouldn't have to straighten my hair, go bleach my skin, dress in stereotypical white clothing just for you to see me as a human being. Like, you can be chill, Veronica. Like, be cool.
I also just want, I was thinking as she was talking, to bring it back to the conversation about what do I need as a black woman. I think also, yes, you brought up a very valid point. Like, I don't need to always be seen as a black woman. I want to be seen as a human being, in an equal human being in a space. And also, you know, there's kind of two extremes that I've experienced, where it's like, one is you're completely invisible, I'm going to talk over you, I don't care what you have to say. And the other one is, oh, I'm going to cherish you and protect you, and you are like a beautiful black queen. And it's like getting to this Hotep territory. And I, like, yes, I am a beautiful black queen, so is every other black woman, but I don't need to be cradled. I don't need to be protected all the time. I want to be seen as a fully capable human being, which I am. And so sometimes it's just being given the space to talk. Like, I don't need anything other than that from you. I just want to be human and to exist and to speak and be seen as capable.
Exclamation point. So yeah, that was a lot to take in, especially being a black male, identifying just how do I support the black queens out there, and how do I make it so that there's available space for all of you to be supported. And I step back and step up and step back, especially when we feel like we don't have enough resources to, like, sometimes black men feel like we haven't really gotten our concrete ground yet, so we're still fighting for that concrete ground. We just now had a black president, you know, Barack Obama, so it's like, oh, we finally got somebody up there, like, how do we keep that door open? And then it becomes a battle between, oh, well, black men still want to be represented, and then we have the black sisters who we also have to bring into the space. So something that definitely we have to keep working on. And then to touch on Najara's point about sometimes preferring another ethnicity based off of skin tone and body features, someone would sometimes associate that with self-hate and anti-blackness and not appreciating, you know, the beautifulness that's within our own community. So I was wondering, because I was the Black Student Union president at Skyline, and the point of that was to have a safe space on campus for black people to feel loved and supported, and to feel appreciated. My question is, do you feel like we should always be supporting black people based off of just identity? Like, I identify as black, you identify as black, let's just support each other. Like, you walk into a room, you automatically scan for the black people, like, hey, let me resonate to those people just because I want to support my people. Do you feel like that's usually necessary?
Yes.
Oh my God. So is it okay if I take time for this question? So I don't know how to answer this, to tell the truth, because like, I would say yes, but at the same time, it's like we kind of like segregate ourselves, and I don't want us to do that, only because, like, you know, white people be hecka quick to say black people are segregating themselves, but you was segregating yourself for like years, so I don't know what you're talking about, Veronica. But basically what I'm trying to say is, like, I also don't want to be dependent on like other black people for support only, you know. I want to get a little privilege from the white people too. It's honestly a weird kind of question because it can go either way. Like, it depends on what you do with it, I guess. Like, you know, find some support from black people is always all right. Because I remember when I went to camp for the first year at Cal, and like, I was 50% of the black population, and I only had one other black girl with me. And, you know, that support is nice because you need somebody who can understand you, but you also want to like branch out to other races because you want to get rid of those like standards and those stereotypes. And you want to educate other people while you're within that space. And like, sometimes you don't always have black people with you. You might be the only black person in the room, and that's just how it is. Because that girl left after 3 weeks and I was 100% of the black population. And, you know, not everybody can say that they were 100% of the black population at Cal. So it's really hard, you know. Should we scan the room? You know, look around. Is it a Kunta Kinte in here? And, like, sometimes you might not see Uwe Wewe. But, like, you know, it's just different aspects.
I think I have two things to say. One is that I completely agree with you. I think there's a difference between self-segregation and support. So when I walk into a room and I see that there's another black person there, I'm automatically gonna make sure that I'm making myself available to them, being friendly with them, letting them know that I see them, and that, you know, there's this mutual connection, this mutual understanding of how we're taking up space and how we're being perceived in a space. And I think that is important. I agree with you that we can't self-segregate. I just think that never works. But again, self-segregation is different than community building, than mutual support. The second thing that I want to say is that I think there's a different conversation about, you like started by talking about perceiving lighter women as more beautiful and black men seeing that as more beautiful. And I think that's a different conversation than what we're talking about right now, like scanning the room, supporting another black person. And what I have to say on that is I come from an interracial home. So, you know, I'm a little biased, but what I do have to say is that I have a black father and a white mother, or a Jewish mother, and that is the most, their relationship is built on the most real love that I have ever seen in my life. And for that reason, I think if you really love someone who happens to be from another race, go ahead, like, love that person. I'm not going to stop you from loving them. But when you're actively seeking something else, something lighter, that's when you have to look at yourself, and this conversation of self-hate comes. Why am I only looking at white women? Why am I only looking at light-skinned women? Like, why am I blocking myself off to this? But if you happen to meet someone that's white or that's light-skinned, love that person if you love them, but don't go actively seeking someone that looks like them.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I don't feel like I articulated my question very well, so I appreciate, I really appreciate that you were able to clarify that. It's my question. Najara, who is Veronica and what does she do to you? Because, name calling. No, I'm kidding. So yeah, part of why I asked that question about, well, so I started with self-identity and then scanning the room and looking for people. It's because I feel like sometimes black people are are afraid to support one another or to be proud of who they are, of their heritage, of their culture. And if I'm like, oh, I need all my black people to rally up with me, and no one shows up, yet they're proud to be black and they're claiming to love their skin, I'm like, well, when I needed your support, where were you? Because I'm trying to further a movement for all of us. Because I'm thinking about in the community in Oakland right now, there's a thing called gentrification that's happening. A lot of black families who can't afford the rent are being pushed out. And there's a lot of people who don't look like us coming in, who don't share our culture or our backgrounds. And it's really changing how the town is developing. And it's breaking kind of it's like digging out the roots that have been established there. So I was just thinking about how the black community hasn't totally been unified. And so we're dealing with people coming in, and it's not just the black community. There's all, we have a very diverse community, but I'm just speaking to the one that I can refer to. So it's like, how do we coexist and how do we unify? And I feel like we can't unify ourselves yet, like with the people who are coming in, because the people who are already here have not fully become connected with one another on a positive light. There are some communities within Oakland that are, you know, thriving and perfectly unified within one another, but there's like patches of Oakland and not the full Oakland. So to wrap up part of this question, I mean, well, not the question, but the podcast is, how does visibility play out in schools and in the education system when you're looking at the demographics for black students? And is there pros and cons to being visible within your culture? Like, I identify as black, there's eyes on me because I'm black. So what are the pros and cons of people looking at you because of your background and your skin tone and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think just to talk about like Oakland school demographics for a second, they are definitely changing. And it is definitely a direct result of gentrification, like you were talking about. And I just think that it's important to preface that, so I'm glad you were talking about that. But I think, you know, it can be really hard to be the only black person in a space or one of the few, because again, like, you're very visible as a black person in that space, and because of that, you are a representation of every black person, which is a very hard burden to hold, or hard responsibility to hold, you know, and it's not fair, and it happens time and time again. So I think that's a con. A pro is that I feel that I'm able to articulate myself well and represent my community in a way that I'm proud of and that I would want to be represented as. So a lot of times I feel like I can be that person. But again, when you hear a white person say the N-word in front of you and you're the only black person around, like, that's it's just a feeling that can't be described. I feel like every traumatic passed down cell in my body just freezes up and I'm the only person there to defend myself. What do I say? And in that case, like, even if I know that I can articulate myself super well, what do I say? So it can be hard, but there's a lot. There's a lot.
I guess a con would be like, when you're like visible within the space, it's very easy to like target the black person that's in the space, because it's like, well, I read this in an anti-blackness file, but I've always like experienced it. So I used to go to a white school, and you know, like, you know, being the only, not only black person, but like only black person in my specific class, it was like people would like, whenever slavery came up, they was looking at me and I'm like, what do you want me to say? You know, like what she was saying, like when a white person says the N-word in front of you, it gets real awkward because you don't know what to do in that situation. It's like, I'm the only like representation of black person here. Do I like, you know, go black? Or am I supposed to like, you know, calm down and be like, Jennifer, don't say that, you know, Victoria, that's not okay. And like, especially in a room full of white people, because it's kind of, it's really awkward because they a little weird. Like, they might colonize you. Like, you don't want that in, you don't want to get colonized again. And I guess a pro would be like, when you do something, people are like, yeah, she, that's a black woman doing something. Yeah, that's a black man doing something. You know, you get recognized, you like make the black community, well, not look good, but like you, your representation of the black community is good, to put that in an aspect.
Yeah, if you don't mind me adding on to that, what you just said, sometimes they'll single you out thinking that you're the one black person that was able to do that and that you're different from the others. Like, no, I got a whole family full of geniuses and we all came from the same bloodline. I love that you mentioned that. And I can't wait to see, if you do have children, what you gonna name them, because you just naming out all these different types of people.
I was just thinking when you were talking, it takes my brain a minute to piece together things. That also, you know, when you're obviously the only black person in a space, that becomes all that you are seen for. And I love being black, but I don't want to be seen as, or I don't want to be only seen as a black woman all the time. Like, I am, yes, I am black, and I am so proud of that. And I think that that part of me is beautiful, but I also want to be recognized, again, as a fully capable, equal human being in every space that I'm in.
So that concludes our time in the studio. Thank you both for joining me. Again, I'm here with Isha Clark and Najara Soriano. And this is a very powerful conversation. I really wanted to have this here with them after that Black Allyship Circle. It was actually Black Allyship Conference, but we were in the shape of a circle, that Miss Isha held and facilitated, and she did a great job. So I knew I wanted to have this conversation again and make it bigger and better. Well, not bigger and better, but, you know, I wanted a lot more people to hear it and to continue this conversation. So if you didn't know, this is my first time hosting a podcast on my own. So I hope I did well, and please feel free to give us some feedback, join in on the conversation. If you're in the Bay Area and you want to support young black students, you know, I just graduated.
You could pay for my college.
Some of us are still in high school, doing a lot of great work. Like I said, Miss Isha is out here killing it. And I'm going to Chabot College, so I'll still be in the facility and helping out the Black Student Union at Skyline, building it up and making sure they have all the support they need. Shout out to Dr. Charles Cole III, who allowed us to have this time in this space, and he's just been patiently waiting for us to finish. So I hope y'all enjoyed this conversation. And if you have something to add, feel free to reach out to us some way, somehow, because this is a lifetime of work that we're doing, and we're living this experience, and we're not the only ones. So thank you for listening. Tune in next time. I'm Jonathan Piper. Enjoy.
I wear my crown, my hair, my hair, my crown, my hair, my crown, my hair, my hair, my